what is risk management or risk assessment?
Well, risk assessment is the use of scientific methods to identify risks and characterize them as fully as possible. So, for example, we would use epidemiologic studies, observations on human populations to try and find out what influences the health of individuals. We can go into the laboratory and use toxicology studies of experimental animals to try and predict potential human risks, human health risks. We can do surveillance to see if disease rates are changing that can be related to changes in our environment. And even clinical trials often provide information about things like adverse reactions to pharmaceutical products. So there are many ways in which we can use science to identify risks to human health. That's the risk assessment piece.
How is this being applied to diseases like BSE or all of the interest now in prion-related diseases?
That's an interesting question. Prion diseases are something which we've learned a lot about only relatively recently. The BSE or mad cow epidemic is something that started in the mid-1980s, largely in the United Kingdom, made its way to other countries, presumably through the export of cattle that may have been affected with the BSE agent, through the export of meat and bone meal that also would be infected with the BSE agent. So BSE is a risk issue which does have a certain impact, but that impact has been largely in the animal population. We have only a handful, perhaps a couple hundred worldwide cases of the human version of that disease, variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. But in the animal population, there were literally hundreds of thousands of cases that were slaughtered in the United Kingdom to control the epidemic. So the impact has been different than most health risks that we're focusing on. It's been largely a socioeconomic impact, loss of economic productivity in the cattle industry.
Well, just looking at the mad cow crisis, as we saw it, first of all, manifest itself in the UK and the outfall of that, and then again here in Canada, and while there's still just a handful of cases, it also had economic impact. Were there lessons learned?
Well, there was a huge economic impact. The one that I mentioned already was sort of the direct economic impacts. If you have BSE in your cattle, nobody wants to buy your beef. All your export markets evaporate overnight. But there's additional impacts beyond that. There's the secondary economic impacts of industries that, you know, people who truck cattle to market, they don't have as much business because nobody's buying your beef. There are impacts on farm families. There's psychosocial impacts, which have only, I think, really come to light when we've looked carefully at the full suite of impacts that this crisis has caused. If you ask the Canadian public what they think of when they think of BSE as a risk issue, and we've done this through a national survey of risk perception, the first thing they think of is the economic impacts. They don't think of the health issue, the potential for human health risk.
If you look at the various health issues that Canadians face, on the one hand, here we're concentrating on things like BSE or other prion-related diseases. But at the same time, we're dealing with a very large crisis, dealing with obesity and diabetes. How do you compare the two when it comes down to risk assessment?
And this is the challenge for risk managers. If you were responsible, let's say, for Canada's national risk management budget, we don't have a single budget envelope for that, but there are various government departments and agencies that are responsible for specific risk management responsibilities. If you were responsible for that budget, how would you spend it optimally? Well, you'd probably look at what are the biggest risks that we face in Canada, which are the ones where we have an opportunity to modify those risks. Some are not modifiable, others are. And you'd come up with some rational plan as to try and do the best you could overall with your risk management resources. If you look at BSE in that context from a health point of view, it would rate very low. We do not have in Canada a single case of VCJD, the human version of mad cow disease, that we can associate with the consumption of beef contaminated with the BSE agent. So as of this point in time, the risk could be argued to be virtually zero. But what that argument overlooks is the huge socioeconomic impact that BSE has had. We've had in excess of $10 billion in negative socioeconomic impacts from the BSE crisis so far. Each of those mad cows is costing us close to $1 billion in adverse effects. And on that scale, it's huge. We would be hard-pressed to identify very many risk issues that have had that kind of socioeconomic impact in this country.
When you look ahead, what are the things, from your perspective, that we should be considering in terms of the risks of these diseases?
Well, I think in terms of BSE, certainly the feeling in Europe where the epidemic originated is all that the preventive measures that have been in place, the banning of feeding of meat and bone meal, the disposal of high-risk materials, the enhanced feed ban that we now have in Canada. There's a whole series of interventions that have been put in place to really, I think, control the BSE epidemic quite well. So in Europe, the feeling is largely, it's over. We've managed the BSE crisis, and we don't need to worry too much about it anymore. In Canada, I suspect that those same control measures are probably have had the same result, that the worst of the BSE crisis is probably behind us now. But we still have the possibility of new cases of the human version of the disease. It takes a long time between the consumption of cattle, beef contaminated with the BSE agent, before the human version of the disease develops. We may see in the future some cases of variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. But even more importantly, as we look to the future, it's not just BSE and VCJD. There's a whole class of diseases that are related to template-directed protein misfolding. And one of the ones that we're really focusing on now within PreOnNet Canada is chronic wasting disease, present in deer and elk in Alberta and Saskatchewan, present in same cervids in Colorado and Michigan, Wyoming, and the U.S., also present to a certain extent in Korea. But this is an epidemic that's increasing. It's a similar class of diseases. And what would happen if that disease were to jump the species barrier? Hunters who consume deer and elk who may have CWD. Is it possible there could be a human version of that disease? What we'd like to do is get out ahead of the risk curve and try and anticipate and prevent the next transmission of a disease of this type to humans. So we are focusing on, is it possible that CWD could transmit to humans? We will be hosting an expert group meeting in Ottawa later this month, where we're bringing about over 10 international experts in this area to ask that question. You know, do we need to worry about CWD possibly transmitting to humans? And if so, are there things that we could do to try and prevent that from happening, as was the case with BSE turning into VCJD from the consumption of beef contaminated with the BSE agent?
To do what you suggest, which is get out ahead of the curve, what would that cost you? What would you invest?
That's a beautiful question, because as a risk manager, our ideal goal is to anticipate and prevent the next major risk crisis. What do you think happens when I go to perhaps the federal government and say, we'd like to spend $25 million to try and prevent a crisis on a new risk issue that hasn't yet occurred? It's a hypothetical risk. It hasn't yet materialized. To try and get people to commit money to engage in preventive action where there's not clear evidence that there may be a risk downstream is hard. On the other hand, if we do undertake that action and we can prevent even one disaster on the order of the BSE crisis, which is upwards of $10 billion and counting, that small investment of $25 to $50 million would be well worth it.
What do you see then as being the most important things we should be focusing on with this new class of prion diseases?
Well, as I mentioned, I think it's probably fair to say that we've done a good job of controlling BSE. One thing we need to do is remain vigilant and make sure that all the control measures that we've put in place are being fastidiously applied so we don't get lax and slip back and then allow a resurgence of the disease. We also need to worry about the human version of the disease, VCJD, because there is the possibility of secondary transmission via blood, which we need to focus on. There's the possibility of secondary transmission via contaminated surgical instruments. The prion protein is a sticky, highly indestructible protein that can remain in soil and on surgical instruments for an extended period. So we need to find ways to decontaminate both soils and surgical instruments as best we can. And we also need to worry about organ transplantation, xenotransplantation, which is another source. So I would put some emphasis on controlling VCJD within the human population. But probably the most highest priority, and this is where PrionNet is heading at the moment, is to think about CWD as an emerging issue which has the potential possibly to affect the human population. So we'd like to certainly control CWD within the cervid population, but at the same time make sure that we assess fully the possibility of transmission to humans. And if that is a possibility, let's take action before it's too late.
How do you then get past crisis management and get into what you're really suggesting, which is looking ahead and trying to prevent the crisis before it happens?
Well, let me break that question down into three parts. If we look at what we've done in the past in terms of risk management, we have a whole series of traditional approaches to managing risks. There's regulation, there's economic approaches, economic incentives and disincentives to reduce risk. There's advisory approaches, tell people how not to come in contact with the HIV virus. There's community-based approaches for health promotion, for addressing the obesity problem. And there are technological approaches, therapeutic products, anti-pollution pollution control devices. So a whole suite of classical approaches that we can use to identify, to address existing risk issues. Second part second point I'd like to make is, as we look at our past practice in risk management, it has been somewhat reactionary. It's sort of a react and cure to risks that are already upon us. And the key thing, and this is my third point, is it would be nice to get to a more proactive way of doing business with risk, to get out ahead of the risk curve, to anticipate and prevent the next BSE. And the problem in going from that reactive to proactive approach is people are faced with some pressing problems today, and when you tell them about a problem that may be on their doorstep in a year or 5 years and 10 years, and you'd like a lot of money to prevent it, may not always be the sort of thing that they want to invest their resources in.
Thank you very much, Daniel.
Thanks for having me.